Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with your Armada advice. In the rules, when it says you, it means you, the player, with one important exception. When it says you on a ship upgrade card, it is referring to only the ship that the upgrade is attached to. For example, the Paragon title only gives you the extra die against a ship that Paragon has already attacked this round, not that you, the player, has with any other ship or squadron. Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with you.
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the 17th episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim. The League has begun, and we had a stellar first week turnout of 11 players. This is great, and our largest non-tournament turnout for Armada that we've had, so it's very exciting. We are taking up a bit more real estate than we'd planned, though, but I'm okay with pushing the X-Wing players to the side for once. The Imperials came out on top in Week 1 with a couple of big wins, so the Rebels have some catching up to do, but they're not out yet. I played my first game on the Imperial side. With an odd number of people, I'm doing a fill-in role for whichever side needs it, and I got to run a Constantine fleet with the Interdictor. It was a hilarious amount of speed-controlling fun, and I want to both play as and against Constantine a bit more in the future. But now, we're going into villains. Sadly, the second half of the show is running a bit long, so we're going to just do one again this week, and this time it's IG-88 and the Aggressor. The Aggressor is the Imperial answer to the YT-2400, as it excels at dogfighting with enough hit points to make it through the fight, and a solid black die against ships. It's the same points for one less speed and equivalent 4 blues against squadrons, but it's got counter to compensate, making it an easily overlooked answer to any Rebel equivalent squadron, as well as the YT-2400 spam that's becoming popular. With the advent of Gazantes, squadron activations come on the cheap now, so cheaper interceptors might work better for your anti-squadron needs, but a few aggressors can fill the same role while freeing up your ships to do the heavy anti-ship lifting they want to focus on. Mostly, they're just a very flexible ship, filling the same role as the A-Wing, just at a slower pace and with more staying power and the ability to activate on their own. They do best when locking down squadrons and bomber wings with big attacks and counter hits, but that black die means they can threaten ships with solid effect. Even the Gazanti can give them some new tricks, though, as they can take advantage of the Vector title to leap out at a respectable speed 4, and then run on their own for the rest of the game with Rogue, while that Gazanti can go off and do other things like use repair crews or slicer tools. Lots of folks love fire sprays for their Rogue flyers due to the addition of Bomber, another hull point, and a little more emphasis against ships than squadrons for only 2 more points. But just as the A-Wing is typically pound for pound a better choice than X-Wings as an all-round fighter, the Aggressor is a more efficient choice for that role than fire sprays, and those 2 points per squadron can add up quickly. IG-88 is their ace, and it's a flat-out ace killer. Iggy's 5 more points, but for that you get 5 speed, counter 2, and the ability to ignore counter and escort. Its only weakness is that it has just 1 scatter token for defense, so a single accuracy forces it to take full damage. But that 5 hull means that Iggy will still take at least 2 hits to drop, wedge notwithstanding, and they've got to get accuracies on both attacks to keep the assassin droid from just dodging away. Pair IG-88 with a Jumpmaster or Dengar to allow it to jump around from ace to ace, cutting the heart out of your opponent's fighter wing, and old Dengar bumps its counter up to a mighty 3 for when your opponent tries to put it on the scrap heap. Unsurprisingly, Iggy pairs well with other aggressors, letting them engage and lock down the forward elements of the opposing squadron wings while it uses those extra speed to hop behind and start knocking out the more vulnerable parts on its own. With speed 5, you can even use it alone to attack a smaller squadron wing, ideally wiping it out before burning away to get back into the fight to threaten a ship or help mop up other squadrons as needed. Even the fastest ships can't get away from this droid either, as his ship speed 4 is no match for squadron speed 5. IG-88 is pricey, but well worth it if your squadron goal is to eliminate enemy fighters.
They bring an X-Wing, you bring an assassin droid. It's the Nah Shaddaa way.
Okay, folks, I might have fibbed a bit earlier. The second half didn't end up running as long as I thought it would, so we're going to fit in Bossk and the YV-666. I'm just going to start off by saying that I'm not a fan of the YV-666. It's 15 points, which gives you Grit, Rogue, 7 Hull, and 2 Blues, 2 Blacks for taking care of squadrons, but it has two glaring problems. If you removed either one, the 666 would fill a nice bodyguard role for your ships, but when it's both Speed 2 and Heavy, it's both not going anywhere fast and not locking down bomber wings when it gets there. Remove Heavy, and it's a Colossus lumbering about, forcing you to deal with its 7 hull before you can move on. Make it faster, and it can't lock anything down, but it can keep up with most bombers and reposition well with Grit and Rogue. Plus, the blue anti-ship die means it's not going to be making attack runs on capital ships anytime soon. But I like to stay positive on fire when ready, so let's talk about what we can do with it. First off, a couple of 666s can still bodyguard your ships. They won't be stopping bombers from getting their attacks off, but that anti-squadron battery is going to put the hurt on non-ace enemy fighters, and with a bit of luck, can use the blues to lock down ace defense tokens. Grit will let them reposition a bit if you don't ram them into the middle of a bunch of fighters, though your opponent has zero incentive not to try to bury it under a mass of their own squadrons to negate that. What it does really well is pair with Ruthless Strategists. That's an underused and overlooked card that's only 4 points, and mostly overlooked because it occupies the same slot as some other excellent upgrades like Gunnery Team and Ordnance Expert, but it can cause a lot of damage when paired with a 666. Yes, you're trading a damage on the YV-666 for one on the engaged ship, but one guaranteed damage against a squadron will add up, and with 7 hull, the 666 can afford to take it for a while. The trick is to get the 666 into position to be engaged with the squadron you really want to kill at speed 2. Pair it off with a raider moving slowly, and you can get some good mileage out of sacrificing your 666. A Gladiator 2 with fighter support teams will make it even easier to get into position. You might want an escort fighter to keep it alive longer, but it might also serve you to let it just take hits. If you're running it alongside a strategizing ISD, for example, every fighter that opens up on the 666 is one that's not making a bombing run. You could also add a Gazanti with jamming field to keep it alive even longer against fighter wings. But here's the problem. We're now paying a lot of points to fix the weaknesses of a single squadron. It's 19 points for the 666 and the strategists, and using it takes up an arc that should probably be firing on ships. I don't see how that's an effective use of points. That said, if you want to be different and have 34 points to knock around, try out a raider with one of the titles, Ruthless Strategists, and a couple of YV-666s, and see if you can make that tactic work for you. Go on, it'll be fun. Now, Bossk, on the other hand, is the YV-666 I was hoping for. He's speed 3 and non-heavy, getting rid of both problems I had with the base ship. He drops the 2 blue anti-squad dice for going all in on black dice, and with the ability of gaining a blue die set to accuracy once he's taken a point of damage. He then tosses on a black die to his anti-ship barrage and gains a single brace token. So yeah, he can really go toe-to-toe with squadrons, keep up with most ships and fighter wings, reposition with Grit and Rogue, plus he still synergizes well with Ruthless Strategists, even more so because taking the damage from it will trigger his ability. What's not to love? Well, the fact that he's 23 points. Being that expensive means you're less likely to want to throw him away with Ruthless Strategist pranks. His single brace means that 2 decently lucky shots will whittle him down so badly that any use of strategists at all might take him off the board. So while he could be used offensively in the manner that I described above for the base ship, I don't think that's the best use of him. Bossk can be put in as part of a squadron wing, though he lacks escort to get the most out of his big hull value. He is still a huge threat, though, and your opponent is going to either want to focus in on him to burn him as quickly as possible before he can get much use out of his ability, or ignore him completely. Even ignoring him, Bossk will still cut down standard ships quickly, and can put serious hurt on non-scatter aces with his lack of accuracy. With his ability, he's a killing machine, though. One option is to pair him with Boba Fett to guarantee his ability kick-in. That's a good plan, but that's a lot of points in those two ships. I could see doing it with Fett and maybe a couple of fire sprays as a pseudo-escort for that bomber attack wing, since he's such a major threat your opponent would have to devote some resources to him. But again, it's pricey. Where I see him doing best is in the bodyguard role for something like an ISD. Pair him with a couple of TIE fighters for an extra attack boost and keep them ready to engage any bombers that come in. The ISD can throw serious damage out on its own, and Bossk will keep those fighters locked up with his huge hull long enough for that to take effect. There's nothing to stop your opponent from trying to quickly kill off the TIEs, and they probably should, but that's less attacks going into your big dog. A single TIE advanced wouldn't hurt either, as his single brace is pretty easily locked down, forcing him to take full damage from attacks. One last thing to remember. His ability is on all attacks. If you manage to get him in on a ship and he's taken damage, his attack run will get an extra blue accuracy on it. While Bossk isn't a bomber, that accuracy can help the damage he does to go where he wants it. Like a Bossk. After the break, we're going to enter the minefields for some objective talk.
When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Lynnwood, Washington. They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com.
We're back. And let's talk minefields. I honestly can't think of a list that I wouldn't take minefields in. There might be better choices for your particular list, but when in doubt, minefields will always deliver. Whether it's taking advantage of your fleet's agility, negating your opponent's agility, driving them into a killing field, or taking advantage of their lack of agility, the right configuration of mines will give you a boost. So when should you put it in your list? Pretty much any time you feel like it, once you've got the basic mine layouts figured out. Since you'll get to place all obstacles and the mines, minefields is very flexible in its application. I'm going to be posting some pictures to illustrate the various setups I'm going to be talking about on the site, so check there for the visual companion to this episode. Just remember that the mines can hurt you just as easily as they do your opponent, so watch out where you're maneuvering. It has more limited application when you're a smaller, lighter fleet that wants to maneuver willy-nilly, as you're just going to use it to counter your opponent's fleet, but it can still work for you. If you have an interdictor in your fleet with the grab shift upgrade to move obstacles, minefields should be an auto-include for you. You can't move the mines themselves, and you can't overlap them with the obstacles, but when you can move the obstacles you've already placed to react to your opponent's deployment, you can create some very uncomfortable choices for them and close off avenues they thought were open during deployment. How should you use it? How shouldn't you use it? Seriously, though, minefields can be used to bolster or counter equally well almost any list. It's all in how you set up the mines, and you get to do that plus set all the obstacles. It's said that the trade-off for taking first player is that you're playing on the second player's battlefield, and that's especially true with minefields. The first thing you should do is examine your own fleet so you know what your strengths and weaknesses are. Are you a fleet of Star Destroyers that want to keep ships in your big front arcs? Are you a swarm of agile, smaller ships that want to fly all over? Knowing that gives you a baseline to work from, so that you have a default configuration ready to go in your head before you even look at your opponent's fleet. Then, look at your opponent's fleet. Ask the same questions about them, with an emphasis on what you're most worried about in their list. Are they a fast list that could get the jump on you? Do they have an alpha-striking list with activation advantage, like a demolisher that could hit you last in one round and first in the next before you can activate your own ship, like the Clonisher build I discussed in episode 13? Are they big bruisers? Broadsiders? These are things you should ask yourself so you know what you might want to counter in your list to minimize their strengths. I do also want to say that the setups I'm about to discuss are by no means the best or only setups you can use for minefields. You might come up with better ones, and every Armada game is different. Finally, one more quick reminder that there will be pictures up on FireWhenReadyPodcast.com to accompany this episode. And away we go! First, an easy one. If you're a fleet that wants to go toe-to-toe with the enemy, such as a Nebulon Liberty firing line or some long-range Star Destroyers, and you're up against a fleet of smaller ships that aren't long-range broadsiders, the V setup is a good one for you. This configuration is designed to funnel the enemy ships into a kill zone in front of you and punish them for trying to go outside the funnel. Your opponent either plays into your strengths or runs the risk of taking hits, plus having reduced firepower from obstruction, as well as firing at longer range than they're used to. Using this setup with an ISD or VSD-1 isn't recommended, since you'll be facing the same conundrum. And remember that you want them to be playing your game, not giving both fleets the same disadvantage. Next up, what if the reverse is true? You're a swarm or broadside fleet, and they're a smash-mouth front arc heavy one. Well, in that case, you're going to want to try to make their ships to have to turn as much as possible, while not closing off any areas by making them too dangerous. This means you're going to want to spread the obstacles out a bit more. I'd recommend still placing them more towards the midpoint between your deployment zones, however, and away from your side to keep things as difficult as possible for them. Swarm and broadside fleets typically want to flank enemy ships, so staying away from sides and leaving the area around your opponent's deployment zone is a good idea. Again, don't cluster them so much that you make the center too uninviting. In this scenario, you want their ships to have a hard time no matter where they go, not an impossible one. Another reminder is that you don't have to put only one mine on each obstacle. You can double or sometimes even triple up on one obstacle if you really want to put some concentrated pain in an area. Finally, remember that nav orders are going to be the order of the day to get the most out of this design. And this design, more than any other, is an idea to inspire rather than a schematic to be followed. To round things out, here's one that my buddy Josh started using and I put a little twist onto. This layout, which I like to call the Line O' Mines, can be used for a bunch of different fleet setups. To use it, you arrange everything along your opponent's deployment zone edge with mines to fill in the gaps between obstacles. Let's say you have a front-facing fleet, and the opponent is a broadsiding fleet. This forces them to go around to one edge, making it easy to get into their front arcs and stop them. Plus, they're going to be worried about flying off the table. If they're also a front-facing fleet, they're probably larger ships, so they're not going to be able to fit more than two at a time through the gap, which allows you to focus the weight of your firepower into them one at a time, while you have all the room to maneuver in the world. The twist I put onto it is if you're facing off against a high activation swarm fleet that you don't want getting the jump on you, you can place the mines at a certain distance to limit the speeds they can start off at and foil their plans a bit. Let me elaborate. Let's say that you're facing off against a Clonisher style build, lots of raiders with expanded launchers and a demolisher that's going to try to hit and run by activating last, then first so that you can't respond to its triple tap attack. One of the keys to this strategy is being able to control their speed to be able to hit you when they want to, while staying either out of range or at red die range until they strike. With the right placement of mines, they're forced to either go the long way around the line or start at speed 1 or 2 to avoid the mines. I'll illustrate this as well in the visual guide. Just be sure to calculate the distance they can travel by matching the movement tool with one of the measuring tools per Akbar's advice in Episode 7, and try to keep them from starting at speed 2 or 3. You either want them going really slow to allow you to close before they can set up, or at speed 4 so that they leap out so fast that they can't control when they'll be in range of their ships. Of course, in all these situations, they can just ignore the mines and take their chances with the dice, but that's okay too. Just be ready for that to happen. When should you choose it from your opponent? You can choose this in a lot of different scenarios, and I hate to say it again, but a lot of it is when the other choices are worse for you. Minefields might stack the deck against you, but at least it has some random chance in the dice. Plus, you can always try to outmaneuver it. Minefields is an objective where it forces you into a lot of navigation orders, and more than most objectives, you really are playing on your opponent's battlefield. But that's as it should be. You get to go first, but they have the advantage of terrain. I think this objective is the best test of how adaptable and skilled you are as a commander, and it thrills me every time I take it. Yes, you can get trapped and hurt pretty badly by mines, or your opponent minimizing your strengths, but breaking through that and coming out on top anyway is a huge rush. Now that said, you might not want to take this in a tournament situation as it doesn't bolster your points and puts you at a fairly decent disadvantage, but for pure challenge, I love it. Here's a couple tactics you can try to minimize their effect on you. First, play the game they're expecting you to, but do it faster or with more risk than they expect. In my line of mines setup above, if they want you to go around the long edge, set up to do that, but fire some smaller ships out fast before they get into range. An example of this is in my MC-80 to MC-30 list, where I might shoot the 230s out fast before the enemy can block everything in. With enough nav orders, I should be able to have the 30s hit from a flank just as the 80 is coming out of the gate, broadsides blazing, and instead of facing a parade of ships one at a time, they're facing my whole fleet from unexpected directions. Always try to put your opponent on their back foot with the unexpected in minefields. They've set the battlefield a certain way to try to make you play their game, and deploying like they expect, only to switch it up, is a great way to do that. The other thing you can do is send out a minesweeper to clear a path for your ships. The best ships to do this with are either a larger ship that can take the hits and hit as many mines as possible with its larger base, then repair the damage quickly, or a smaller ship that you can afford to just throw away if the mine dice are particularly cruel. Doing so will hurt your fleet, which plays a bit to their advantage, but it's daring and probably not what they're going to expect. This is especially a good move if you can do it while setting up to appear like you're going to try to avoid the mines, then do a hard turn with your sweeper and let the rest of your fleet follow behind. They probably won't be expecting it, and ideally will have deployed like you're going to follow the flight plan they've tried to force you into with the mine placement. In the funnel type of placement, deploy like you're going to go head-to-head with them, then suddenly turn hard and take the hits in order to swing around them. It's probably unexpected, and you might gain the advantage, particularly if they've got a bunch of shorter-range ships than you do, where the damage trade-off works in your favor to put the range game back in your court. As I said, I love minefields because it's a challenge. It can be set up to negate the advantages of a lot of fleets, and coming out on top against it is always a thrill.
That's it for this episode. Next time, we'll pull Boba Fett out of the Sarlacc and hopefully get into some rogues, as I hopefully have a little less to say about Intel Sweep. Until then, you worry about those fighters, and I'll worry about the tower. We're only awaiting your approval, Admiral.
It's a wrap!
Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast, can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim or by email at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.